Chapter 8 of Amazon Grace is titled Women's Space and Amazon Grace. After an hour or so of relaxation, we settled down again for the next phase of our transtemporal discussion. "I'd like to continue our discussion of women's space," said Kate. "All right, let's go," I said. As I wrote in Quintessence, our work is both envisioning and creating the world we have been envisioning. As I understood women's space back there slash then, this space slash time is a locus for realizing such a twofold project. It is of its nature prophetic, and you, my four sisters of the archaic future, are furthering this work. "And as we all cast ourselves farther out," continued Kate, "we realize more fully our true identity as outcasts. As outcasts from patriarchy slash phylocracy slash fooldrum slash snooldrum, we break open the castes slash castes in which the fools slash snools have enclosed women." "Yes," said Sophie, "and we run and leap far, far away and find ourselves here, on Lost and Found. And we know when and how and where to leap, because the final cause, or end, causes by attraction," said Annie. "We understand from our own experience that the final cause is first in the order of intentionality, so the end is really the beginning." "Right, Annie," I said. "The end makes itself present to us by magnetic attraction. When we experience the attractive energy of the earth, the end, we find the will and the means to achieve it. It is not necessary to focus obsessively on the means because the power of this attraction has a magical effect. It manifests the truth of the adage, where there's a will, there's a way." "Oh yes," broke in Kate. "Concretely, this means that things begin to happen. Books literally jump off shelves. The right helpers just happen to show up when needed. Synchronicities abound. Seeing a particular film suggests layers of ideas and possible actions that previously were hidden. The world shimmers with heretofore unsuspected messages and meanings. Friendships are formed and fired. Creative endeavors flame out and flourish. We begin to remember the experience of happiness. What is most exciting in this process of realizing the end is that we begin to sense its presence not only as magnetic attractor, but also as morphic attractor," I said. "That is, we begin to understand that it engenders what Rupert Sheldrake has called morphic fields." "Well, you continue to use Sheldrake as a springboard, and that's fine with me," said Kate. "As you know, Mary, we managed to bring some of his works to Lost and Found Continent, having been motivated by your suggestion, so we can follow through on the references. We understand that you spin off from his work at times, as well as those of other male authors, such as Aristotle and Aquinas, while always giving due credit. This is characteristic of your work as a radical feminist pirate, righteously ripping off knowledge that has been stolen from women, as you explain in your intellectual autobiography, Outer Course." "Thanks, Kate, for being so attentive," I say. "Yes, that is exactly what I do. I try to be scrupulously honest in identifying these sources, which I look upon as secondary sources, and then developing and sometimes altering the ideas as they help us to unfold our own understanding of the archaic past and future." I'm impatient to hear more about this," said Kate. "Great," I replied. "To leap back to Sheldrake's theory, then, I will begin by paraphrasing and quoting from his glossary to the presence of the past. In his definition of morphic field, he writes, "The term morphic field includes morphogenetic, behavioral, social, cultural, and mental fields. Morphic fields are shaped and stabilized by morphic resonance from previous similar morphic units, which were under the influence of fields of the same kind. They consequently contain a kind of cumulative memory and tend to become increasingly habitual." "You see, Kate," I said, "the definition, though Sheldrake most likely could not have thought of this, applies beautifully to our inheritance from the four sisters of the past, who are under the influence of fields of the same kind. But there is a problem." "Let me guess," said Kate. "Does it have something to do with the word previous in the definition?" "Right on," I replied. "Nothing is mentioned about the important causal role of the future. This would appear to leave no room for the influence of lost and found continent. The problem is even more explicit in the glossary definition of morphic resonance. Sheldrake explains this as the influence of previous structures of activity on subsequent similar structures of activity organized by morphic fields. Through morphic resonance, formative causal influences pass through or across space and time, and these influences are assumed not to fall off with distance in space or time, but they come only from the past. So there you have it. It would seem that you cannot influence us, I said with a conspiratorial grin. I must be hallucinating about the influence of you future Four Sisters. Well, that does not apparently leave us inhabitants of Lost and Found Continent pretty much out of the picture, doesn't it? Queried Kate with a perplexed smile. You wouldn't worry about it, I said reassuringly. After all, we have never met, and here we are now. The possibilities of mutual creation are virtually unlimited. Kate seemed to have a dawning realization. Yes. And I am having another insight about all this, she exclaimed. The irksome thing about the passage from Sheldrake that you just read was the way emphasis is placed on the past, as in his statement that the formative causal influences come only from the past. That sounds like a one-way street if we hear it only superficially. But, I rudely interrupted. Oh, I think I know what you're driving at, Kate, I said. If we choose to hear that passage about morphic resonance in our own context, we can hear the word past as meaning archaic past. Since our sense of time is not linear, but spiraling, it is always enlightening to reflect upon the archaic future as coming from the pre-patriarchal past. So the archaic future recalls, calls back, calls ahead that past, and it renames the past and re-energizes that past, renewing its causal force, recausing its causality. Kate nodded. Yes, and it is our shared participation in that past that makes possible our mutual gynergizing influence. She paused and looked at me quizzically. I wonder what you were just thinking, Mary, she said. You have that spacey look that has become familiar to your friends here on Lost and Found Continent. What's up? Oh, I was just thinking about the very last sentence of the epilogue to The Presence of the Past, where Sheldrake writes, "We shall sooner or later have to give up many of our old habits of thought and adopt new ones, habits that are better adapted to life in a world that is living in the presence of the past, and is also living in the presence of the future, and open to continuing creation." Funny that he was inspired to write that at the very end of the book, I said. Yes, Kate agreed, and it's even funnier that we're sitting here discussing it. We seem to be doing quite well in adopting new habits of thought as we sit and chat on Lost and Found Continent. We both be-laughed in self-congratulation. Our be-laughing resounded in great spiraling waves out to the farthest reaches of the universe. It's resounding now.